This is your AEW Rampage review here for October 22nd, 2021, hanging out on a Friday night. I am the Solemn Monster. What a main event that was. Oh my goodness. I had read that this was going to be a main event not to miss. I didn't see any of the spoilers, but I did hear things from people who were in the building when Rampage was taped the other night that this was not a match to miss. What a main event on what was otherwise pretty standard fare. For an episode, I thought of Rampage. Pac and Andrade went out there and they delivered a clinic. They went out there and they had a great fucking main event. Match of the year caliber? I don't know that it'll be match of the year, but it's certainly up there in that category. These two went out there and tore the house down. And tonight, what we saw in that main event, and as we were getting closer to the end, this is what I thought of, because we really haven't seen Andrade have the chance to go out there. Yeah, he kind of did in the first match with Pac that they had on Rampage, you know, many weeks ago. But tonight was better. This is the better of the two matches. Tonight, what we saw in that ring was the Andrade that we got in Philadelphia against Johnny Gargano at TakeOver. We got to see that Andrade in the ring tonight. That is the kind of match that he could be having here in AEW going forward against other people other than Pac. I mean, he's not going to wrestle Pac forever. But that's the Andrade we got in the main event and why it was so good. In fact, one thing that struck me as I was watching the very end of the show when the match was over and we had Andrade standing in the ring, we had Pac standing in the ring, and when the lights came on, we had Malakai Black standing in the ring. All three men, former NXT champions. Interesting. Cody, not a former NXT champion, although his father does have ties to NXT. Not an NXT champion, but three former NXT champions there to close out the show. Like and subscribe. Let's get those likes up if we can. Thank you for hanging out with me on a Friday night and choosing me for your Rampage coverage. I do appreciate it. I am going to be reading all of your super chats for those who wish to send one in. You'll see the little dollar icon there, and if you want the special donation amounts that correspond to certain special super chats, you'll find them in the description down below. I thank you all for your support, including everybody who joined me yesterday for Crown Jewel on a Thursday afternoon. We had a big turnout for the stream yesterday afternoon, and I want to thank everybody for hanging out with me as well yesterday. So tonight, the World Title Eliminator kicked off. This is the tournament that's going to go all the way to Full Gear. The finals will take place at Full Gear, but tonight was the opening match. We had Orange Cassidy taking on Powerhouse Hobbs, with the winner meeting either Jon Moxley or Preston Vance, 10 of the Dark Order, in the next round. Cassidy had his ribs taped up after a lot of his recent run-ins with Matt Hardy. He was selling a rib injury. The babyface valiantly trying to fight through an injury here to win the match. Hobbs hit a spine buster less than 30 seconds into the match, got a close near fall, and he dropped him on the guardrail with a back suplex. He was punishing this guy. He had him at one point wrapped around the ring post, almost like they described it as like a bow and arrow type position. He was trying to bend this guy like Gumby. He was trying to break him in half. So he was punishing OC. Cassidy went for a crossbody. Hobbs caught him in midair, flipped him up onto his shoulders for a torture rack. I don't remember the last time I saw a torture rack. Probably since Lex Luger. I mean, who else uses a torture rack anymore? I don't know. I mean, certainly nobody that I'm aware of in modern wrestling right now. So that was interesting. Cassidy, though, fought out of it. He kneed his way out of it, got a cradle for a near fall. He went for the orange punch. Hobbs caught him in midair, backed him into the corner, and he wouldn't relent. Came in for a splash. He was smothering this guy in the corner, and Bryce Remsburg is putting the five count on, and he's threatening to disqualify Hobbs if he doesn't let up. See, in WWE, this would be one of those disqualify for kicking too much ass finishes. Thankfully, we don't have very many DQs here in AEW, which is a plus. So Hobbs grabs the referee, which probably should have been a DQ. He grabs Bryce Remsburg, picks him high up into the air, and literally places him in another corner in the ring. So he took him from one side of the ring to the other, And Bryce was, you know, he was not letting this guy, you know, bully him. He was up in his face. He was threatening to disqualify him. Hook could see what was going on here. See, Hook has a good grasp on the situation, and Hook could see victory slipping away. He got up on the apron to try to calm things down. While all of this is going on, Hobbs is distracted. Cassidy sneaks up behind him and uses the mousetrap to roll up Hobbs for the win, with the story being that, you know, Hobbs let his temper. He's got a bad temper. He's got a short fuse. And in this match, he allowed his temper to get the better of him. And he paid the price for it. He lost the match. I hate that Hobbs lost this match. I figured he was going to lose. It was, you know, pretty apparent when you look at what happened last week when Jon Moxley made short work of Wheeler Yuta. Yuta, of course, has been hanging out with the best friends, Orange Cassidy. Cassidy was in Yuta's corner last week. Moxley beat the hell out of Yuta last week and beat him very quickly. And Cassidy was in the ring, kneeling beside him to make sure he was okay. Didn't hit me right away, but later on, looking at it, it seemed like maybe that was a little seed planted for something between Moxley and Cassidy. Once the brackets came out and you saw that if they both advanced, they would be wrestling each other, that kind of made it obvious where this was going to go. So not exactly a shocking finish. And look, to the AEW audience, Orange Cassidy is over. I mean, you may not like his gimmick. You may not really be an OC fan, but the AEW crowd, he is still a big babyface. He is still very much over. So I understand why they put him over if they want to get to him and Moxley. And look, we've talked about the possibility that Jon Moxley maybe, possibly, could go heel, either at Full Gear or after Full Gear. If they're setting up for a Moxley heel turn, there may be another motive for them wanting to do Moxley and Cassidy in the next round. Not that he's going to go heel in that match, but maybe, you know, he's a little more aggressive than usual. Maybe he, you know, goes after the ribs a little more than a babyface would in that situation. Maybe there's something that happens in that semifinal match that when we look back at it, it'll go, okay, that made sense why they wanted Orange Cassidy to move on. I still wish that Hobbs would have gone further in this tournament. You know, Team Taz really's got to get something going. They have nothing going on right now. Ricky Starks is the FTW champion. Taz literally had to hand his own belt to one of his men. It's not even an officially sanctioned championship. So to me, that doesn't really count as being all that big of a deal. They got to heat up Team Taz somehow. They got to get things going with those guys. Tony Schiavone was in the ring next. He called out one half of the tag team champions. Rey Fénix was not here. Tonight, it was Penta, who came out with Alex Abrahantes, who I guess was not on QVC duty tonight, I guess. I did see him pop up on QVC. He's got another side gig as a computer guy. He was trying to sell me a laptop on QVC a few weeks ago, so I'm looking for a new computer. So I was paying very close attention to what Alex was selling. I think it was an HP maybe or something. The specs didn't quite line up with what I'm looking for. But this is a multi-talented man who's got many different jobs, apparently. So they're in the ring for an interview. But before this thing could even get going, they look over. And Penta looks over. Alex looks over. And they see that over in the corner outside in the front row are two dudes in green lucha masks. The same kind of masks that FTR were wearing in their match last week when they won the AAA tag team titles from the Lucha Bros. When they were the, what would they call themselves? The Super Frogs? Forgot the Spanish word. What's the Spanish word for frogs? I already forgot the name of the team. We'll call them, I'm dressed like a frog. Look at this. It's all green. Notice that on the stream here. Got the lights. Got the shirt. I look like a fucking frog. Ribbit. Anyway. They look over and they're spooked because at first they think, oh, it's FTR. Right? They're sitting in the front row. So Penta immediately goes outside and, you know, we on TV can clearly see that it's not FTR. Whereas in the match last week, you just look at their body type and you could tell right away that it's FTR. Las Super Ranas, thank you. We have a lot of Spanish speakers apparently in the chat. Super Ranas. I'm going to call them the Super Frogs though, because that sounds funnier. Teenage Mutant Ninja, yes. Yes, anyway. It was comical, the fact that Penta would even think these guys were FTR when you actually got a close-up look of what they look like. Maybe if they were cutting weight for a UFC fight and they had slept overnight in a vat of self-tanner, possibly they could have passed as FTR. These guys look nothing like FTR. And it wasn't. When they pulled the masks off, it was just two random dudes. And after that, FTR jumped them from behind, knocked down Alex in the ring as well. They were about to beat up on poor Alex when out comes Pac, who is part of Death Triangle, even though we don't really see them together much anymore. Pac came down to make the save. And, you know, I've been reading lately that FTR is very likely going to be defending their AAA tag team titles in Mexico. This is not like a quick thing where they're going to switch the belts back onto Penta and Rey Fénix. They're going to wrestle at least once in Mexico. I think that's great. I think FTR in Mexico doing the whole no flips gimmick that they do. You know, the Lucha Libre style is the complete and polar opposite of what they do when we see them on TV. It is the complete opposite of what they believe in. So I believe them going to Mexico, they could probably get a ton of heat going down there. They're the last people you would expect to be wrestling in Mexico. So I think that's cool. They're going to be defending those titles down there. We had a grudge match, and this one was non-title. It was Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, the AEW Women's Champion, one-on-one against the lovely Anna Jay. And this was the best match that I have ever seen Anna Jay wrestle. I thought Anna Jay looked great in the ring. She looked smooth. I thought the two of them had a good match. But Anna Jay in particular impressed me because I don't know that I've seen a match with her, singles match, better than the one she had here on the show. I've seen better Britt Baker matches. But as far as Anna Jay, I was impressed by what I saw here. So they exchanged finisher attempts at the very beginning of this. They tried to go for their big finish. Britt was working over Anna's arm and shoulder. Anna made a comeback and, again, was real, you know, smooth, hitting all of her spots and everything here. And, you know, some of the stuff she does looks a little on the slow side, a little tentative, but she's also coming back from a pretty serious injury. So I wouldn't be surprised if she's just being extra cautious, too, because she missed a good chunk of her year. She would probably be even more, you know, further along were it not for the injury keeping her out all those months. So probably smart on her part not to do anything dumb. But she hit a flatliner and tried for a Koji clutch. Baker slipped out and Britt dropped Anna face first backwards into the middle turnbuckle to take control ahead of the commercial break. They come back from break and Rebel is outside and she hands Britt the black glove, which is usually the prelude to lockjaw. Britt puts the glove on. Anna, though, comes back, hits a DDT and a drop kick, goes for the cover, but only gets two. Anna looks for the Queen Slayer, which is really just a sleeper hold, but she calls it the Queen Slayer. Baker gets to the ropes, and Anna gets some crucifix pin attempts in here on Britt. She's rolling her around the ring, and finally she transitions back into the sleeper hold. Britt fought up to her feet. Jamie Hayter was also outside. Jamie gets up onto the apron for the distraction, but it does not work. Anna comes over, and she hits her with a forearm, and down goes Jamie Hayter. Anna got the sleeper on again, and Britt Baker went for the WrestleMania 8 finish from Bret Hart against Rowdy Roddy Piper. She tried to replicate that finish. She failed. It did not work. This ended up a little sloppy. But Britt Baker caught Anna with a super kick, and she got the lockjaw applied. Anna tapped out, and after the match, she put the lockjaw back on her again for a second time. Out comes Ty Conti, who, of course, is best friends with Anna Jay, to make the save. She chases off Britt Baker. Britt left her women's championship behind. And so the final shot here was of Ty Conti holding up the women's title and posing with it. Britt, one-on-one against Ty Conti, especially after that finish, I mean, clearly seems to be the direction for Full Gear. It makes sense because Ty Conti is ranked number one. You look at the AEW women's rankings, she is in the number one position. And it would make sense that she would be the one next in line to challenge for the championship. That would also explain why Ty Conti is not part of the TBS title tournament that is coming up. We got the bracket for it tonight. Although, I don't think they could have possibly made the graphic any smaller if they tried. I was looking around for my magnifying glass, like Inspector Gadget over here, trying to see, you know, what does that say? Huh? I can't. I feel like Christian now. I'm like looking. How fucking small was that graphic? I had to search around online for hoping that somebody wrote down the fucking brackets for this tournament. It's like they used a little tiny thumbnail on the screen. Make it a little bit bigger next time so I can read. I'm not as young as I used to be. My eyes are not as great. I don't have that wonderful 20/20 vision like I used to. I mean, I don't have to wear glasses all the time, which is nice. But for God's sakes, you can blow it up a little bit bigger, I think. So I did get the bracket, and the tournament looks like this. We've got Anna Jay one-on-one against Jamie Hayter. The Bunny, who tied Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar last week on Rampage in the demo. How about that? Acknowledge her. Acknowledge the Bunny. She'll go one-on-one against Red Velvet. Serena Deeb in a rematch, one-on-one against Hikaru Shida. And Penelope Ford, one-on-one against Ruby Soho. Now, there are some byes in this tournament. People who are automatically moving on. They are Thunder Rosa, Jade Cargill, Nyla Rose, and Chris Statlander. They all receive byes in the tournament based on their current position in the rankings. So outside of Ty Conti, who is number one, rounding out the top five are the four names I just mentioned. So what they did is they gave all four of those women byes automatically into the tournament. So that's the bracket. Looking at the names here, I think Thunder Rosa would be the babyface favorite. If it's going to be a heel, originally I would have said Jade, but I think Serena Deeb should get it. I'm pulling for Serena in this tournament. I think it's either Rosa or Serena who goes all the way to the finals and wins it. The only thing is, as I look at this, if Serena wins, which would be two straight wins over Shida, and they could do that if they want to drag this whole thing out where Shida is still falling short of her 50th win, she's still chasing after the 50th win, she could lose again. But if Serena wins, she faces Nyla in the next round. And I think it's probably more likely that we get Shida and Nyla, if that's the case. So that's the one thing that has me, you know, kind of questioning this a little bit. But look, the only reason I would not have Rosa win this tournament, I would have no issue with Thunder Rosa winning the whole damn thing. But this is the TBS title. Thunder Rosa should be challenging Britt Baker early next year, maybe at Revolution, for the women's title, the world women's title. She doesn't have to win this title. So I would rather see somebody else get it, other than Thunder Rosa, so she can move on to the other championship. Tony Schiavone stood in this week for Mark Henry for the split-screen interview they do before the main event. And he was interviewing Pac and Andrade before their big match. So first, Mark Henry loses his commentary gig. Remember, he was going to be the big announcer here on Rampage. That was his gig. He lost that. And he was the backstage interviewer, and I'm sure this is just a one-week thing. But first, he lost his commentary gig, and now this week, he lost his backstage interviewer gig. Uh-oh. There's nowhere else to go except off TV from here. Soon, he might just be relegated to busted open radio, and then doing, I guess, community outreach stuff behind the scenes. So there was no Mark Henry on this show. Pac one-on-one against Andrade El Idolo. This was part two. Part deux, as they say. Is that French? I think that's French, right? Is that French? Oui, oui. Part deux. Part one was very good, but it was no part two. Part two was insane. This was easily the best Rampage main event in the short history of this show, and this, I think, will be on that list of best AEW matches of the year. I don't know where on that list it'll fall. The year's not over yet. We still have Full Gear. But this was an awesome main event. Pac hit a snap German suplex before flipping out over the top rope, a running flip dive out over the top onto Andrade. Pac heads up top, and Andrade crotches him, and he goes for knee strikes in the corner. Pac moves, though, and he connects on Andrade with a series of kicks. Andrade went to go kick Pac. Pac, though, moved out of the corner, and the boot hit Pac. Andrade scored, what'd they call it? Was it a torneo? Is that what the move was? I think it was a torneo that he hit. Yeah, the twisting torpedo off the top rope, over the top rope, out onto Pac, who was out on the floor. Very impressive stuff. Then they sent us to a picture-in-picture break. That was the final break of the night. As soon as they come back from break, Andrade is in the middle of the Three Amigos, the second straight night that we have had somebody using that Three Amigos spot. Yesterday in Saudi Arabia, it was Sasha Banks, and you had a bunch of fans in Saudi Arabia chanting Eddie. Here on this show, it was Andrade, and you had a whole bunch of people in the crowd chanting Eddie. I miss Eddie Guerrero. I do. I just wanted to say that. I miss Eddie Guerrero. Andrade had Pac hanging across the, or draped over the middle rope. So, you know, picture a 619 position if Ray was going for the 619. And so Pac is on the middle rope. And Andrade went for, at first, what I thought, he was springboarding, I thought, from the inside out to the apron to hit him in the face, maybe with like a drop kick. That's what I thought initially he was going for. Pac moved out of the way, and Andrade, as he springboarded himself out over the top, he hits the ropes and just falls back. Like, he hits the ropes and falls backwards and hits the apron and hits the floor. He crashed and burned. I mean, it looked bad. Now, later on in the match, they redid the spot. Or maybe it was meant that way and that was only the first attempt. And the whole point was, we'll hit it the second time. I don't know if this was planned or not. Even if it was planned, this looked bad. This looked like a botch. I don't know if it was or not, but it looked like a botch. It looked bad and he could have hurt himself pretty bad, but he was okay. Pac comes back, hits a running Hurricane Rana off the apron. Andrade's on the floor just standing there. And Pac comes off the apron and hits a Rana and takes Andrade over upside down in the corner by the barricade, right into a chair. There's a steel chair sitting there. Pac goes up top and he hits the Orihara Moonsault, which we see Hangman Page use that in every match. Perfect. Picture perfect Orihara Moonsault. Got some height on this too. All the way down onto Andrade on the floor. Back inside, Pac is on the apron, and Pac hits a springboard cutter from the apron into the ring, spikes Andrade right on top of his head, only gets a two. Pac tried for the brutalizer. Andrade, though, got his foot on the bottom rope. Andrade tried to suplex Pac. He was out on the apron. He was trying to suplex him out to the floor. And Pac goes up, but he lands right next to Andrade on the apron, and they start exchanging strikes out on the apron. And Andrade drops him down on the apron, which we were reminded is the hardest part of the ring. I don't know how many of you were aware of this. I don't want this, you know, secret to get out here. This will be just between you and me. But I hear that the apron in pro wrestling is the hardest part of the ring. That's what I hear. I'm going to have to work that into my commentary in a few weeks at the House of Glory when we're on Fight TV. I'll have to work in a ring apron mention about how hard it is, because I don't think the audience is aware of this. I don't know that anybody is aware of this. This is top secret information here that I'm sharing with you. Andrade was going for a moonsault off the top. Pac, though, interrupted it and crotched him. Well, I don't know if he crotched him, but he knocked him off top. And Pac goes up and he hits an avalanche brainbuster, a fucking avalanche brainbuster all the way down to the mat. But Andrade kicked out. And by this point, the crowd was losing their shit. They're chanting, holy shit. Now look, remember, when we usually watch these taped shows, this was a show that was taped the other night. Usually the crowd reaction is not that great because it's at the end of the night. People are tired. They've already seen the really big matches on Dynamite. Yeah, it's kind of like they've blown their load already. But that was not an issue in this match. And again, credit to both these guys, because normally the crowd would be kind of petering out. These people were on their feet. They were into every near fall. They were into this. So Pac comes back, hits a poison Rana. Andrade comes back and he tries for his hammerlock DDT, which was his finish in NXT. Pac, though, ends up cradling him for the win, which ties things up between them at one win apiece. My words do not do it in just you have to go out of your way to watch this match. If you are an AEW fan, if you are a fan of either of these men, and you trust my word, you will take the time, you will take the, what was it, about 12 minutes or so, to go watch this match. My words do not do it the justice that it deserves. This was an excellent main event. I enjoyed this match a great deal. Now, as soon, and this is the part that I didn't think was so great. So, the match ends. As soon as the referee hits three, I mean, as soon as he hits three, the lights go out. The lights in the building go out. And I would say maybe 10 seconds go by. And when the lights come back on, Malakai Black is standing in the ring in one corner. Andrade is in the other, and Pac is in the other. Why is Malakai Black in the ring? I don't know. At this point, but this is when I looked and I said, boy, we have three former NXT champions standing in the middle of this ring. This would be one hell of a triple threat match right now. Malakai spits the black mist into Pac's eyes, and he goes outside, he goes underneath the ring, and he retrieves a steel chair, and he brings the chair back into the ring with him, and before he has a chance to do anything, who should come walking down the ramp? Armed Anderson walks down to the ring and he extends his hand out. And we got Glock Anderson here on Rampage. He extends his hand out for the gun sign, pointing it right at Malakai. Boom. And as soon as he pulls the trigger, who should show up to attack Malakai from behind? Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes, who had lost his focus. And they've spent the last few weeks with these vignettes on TV with Arn taking Cody back to basic training at the Nightmare Factory, trying to get his head back on, you know, focus, you know, you got to focus on Malakai. That's the task at hand. And so Cody showed up here and he was all raring to go and he attacks Malakai Black and he hit his little snap power slam that he does. He picks up the chair, but Black bails out to the floor before Cody has a chance to use it. And so the finale to their trilogy will take place live on Dynamite tomorrow night, because for the second week in a row, Dynamite is going to be airing on a Saturday night. I just thought that the cutaway from the finish of that match was so sudden, it took the attention off what was a fucking awesome match. I mean, when I say that they immediately turned the lights out, like, I'm not exaggerating. Maybe a second went by. And then, boom, there's Malakai. It fed right into the Malakai-Cody angle. And, you know, it was a hot way to close out the show. I don't have an issue with them doing the angle. It's just the sudden cutaway. It seems to me like they realized they were running low on time. And in those situations, it's like when they had a... WWE had to cut Zelina Vega from SmackDown when they were at Madison Square Garden last month. It's a shitty situation. But I didn't blame the company at the time because these things happen when you're on TV live. This was a tape show, though, so this is a little bit different. This was not live TV. Whatever the reason was, I thought that the cutaway was a little too quick. But definitely go out of your way to watch this match if you did not see it. This was fucking great. I am hoping that Malakai will pick up the win again, but I'm predicting a Cody win. I'm a lot less confident this time than I was for match number two as far as who's going to walk out with the W. If it were me, Malakai would go over a third time. And it doesn't hurt Cody at all. Just like I said, if MJF in the end would have beaten Chris Jericho, I mean, Jericho's a made guy. It doesn't hurt Jericho. It would have been a nice feather in the cap of MJF, actually, to be able to say that, you know, it drives Jericho nuts, that he was the one guy that Jericho can never, ever beat. But when you tell these stories, which is what they're doing here, they're telling stories, the good guy does have to win at some point. Right? The babyface has to go over. Not every heel can win every feud because that would be fucking boring too. This feels like a Cody win tomorrow night. But the world title eliminator bracket for the men looks like this. On Dynamite Live tomorrow night, it's going to be Bryan Danielson one-on-one against Dustin Rhodes. I said last week, I will say it again here, do not sleep on this match. I would have put names in this tournament that were different than the ones they put. I would not have had 10 of the Dark Order. I would not have had Dustin Rhodes. Those are really the two main names I would have swapped out for somebody else. Whether it would have been Miro or whether it would have been even like a Dante Martin against, you know, Bryan Danielson. Something like that to me would have been more appealing. But Bryan and Dustin, look, those two guys know what they're doing. I'm sure it's going to end up being a good match anyway. It's just not the match that I would have done. That's tomorrow night, plus Eddie Kingston against Lance Archer. Next Wednesday, when Dynamite is back in its normal slot, I think that's the 27th, Jon Moxley one-on-one against Preston Vance on that show. Let me just mention this. There is probably not going to be a Dynamite stream tomorrow night. I am not planning on a Dynamite stream tomorrow night because I'm going to be gone. I don't know when I'm going to be home, so I don't want to say there's going to be a stream and then there's no stream and I have to kind of race home. So no stream tomorrow night. The Dynamite review I will include as part of episode 727 on Sunday. So whatever happens on Dynamite tomorrow night, I'll cover it all on the main podcast on Sunday. So that's the plan right now. But tomorrow night, you got Jungle Boy one-on-one against Brandon Cutler, Penelope Ford against Ruby Soho in a TBS title tournament match, and of course, Cody one-on-one against Malakai Black. Next Wednesday, it is also on Dynamite next week, Serena Deeb against Hikaru Shida. So I want to make sure I mention that. So yeah, episode 727 on Sunday. Not only are you going to get a Dynamite review, but I'm also going to recap this week's Dark Side of the Ring. I think I'm just going to include it as part of the main show this time. On XPW, I watched that earlier today. That was a very interesting episode. Not really my cup of tea, but I was hoping they would cover the Messiah thumb incident. The thumb that got cut off. And they did. That's one of the only things I knew about XPW coming into this, because I never watched XPW. I was aware of its existence. Obviously, I was aware of the scaffold match with New Jack and Vic Grimes, but I definitely remember the Messiah story, because that was on America's Most Wanted. It was a big news story at the time, and they did cover that, and so I'm going to talk about all that, and that'll be on the podcast on Sunday, so that'll be a fun show. You guys won't want to miss that one. Now, let's check your feedback in the Twitter poll with about 650 votes in so far. 87% thumbs up, 13% thumbs down for tonight's Rampage, and in the live YouTube chat, 90% thumbs up, 10% thumbs down. I'm sure a lot of that probably has to do with that main event. One of the best matches I saw all week. So there you go. Yeah, we had a mention in the chat. Who was that? Was that Marcus? This is a Bound for Glory review on the Sound Off as well. Well, Bound for Glory is Sunday night. I do a podcast earlier on Sunday. So I will run down the card for Bound for Glory and some of the rumors. But I will not be covering Bound for Glory because Bound for Glory does not happen until Sunday night. And I am not streaming on Sunday night. So, is Bound for Glory tomorrow or is Bound for Glory Sunday? I thought Bound for Glory was on Sunday. I thought for sure it was on Sunday. Well, let's see. At 10 p.m., that would be after Dynamite. So actually, that would be a nice little lead-in for Impact, if that was the case. All right. Apparently, Bound for Glory is tomorrow. Wow. Well, I guess I'll have to try. I thought it was on Sunday. Wow. I guess I will attempt to watch the show, or at least, you know, try to pay attention to the key stuff that happens, and obviously, I will cover whatever I do see on the podcast on Sunday, so you can tack that on as well. I don't know if I'll watch the whole show, though. I still have a lot of work left to do for the show on Sunday. I'm way behind. So, there goes my Saturday. Fuck. Fuck! Too much wrestling. Too much wrestling. We all love wrestling, though, right? Let me bring up your Super Chats. I am going to read all of your messages here. And I do thank everybody who sends in a super chat. There we go. Let's bring them on up on screen. Let's get some of that Muzak going here. Have ourselves a little super chat party. And then we will get the hell out of here. Joshua Carlos, we begin with you. Good sir, where would you rank? I love starting with a non-wrestling question. I love it. Where would you rank Halloween H2O among the series Also, are you enjoying the Chucky show? I just watched episode one, and it is pretty decent. I have not seen episode one yet of Chucky. It's on my list. I am watching Creepshow, season three. I think I'm all caught up on that now. H2O is not a favorite of mine, but H2O for me is like middle of the pack. So there have been, I think, 11 or 12 Halloween movies. I want to say 12 Halloween movies so far. I probably would put H2O around number six or so. I think it would pretty much be like right in the middle there somewhere is where it would be on my list. And Joshua says, how would you rank the Edge-Rollins matches so far? Of the three that they've had, the Hell in a Cell match would be number one. The SummerSlam match and the Madison Square Garden match on TV, honestly, are pretty neck and neck. You know, it's funny. I have to go back and watch them. They were so close in quality. I might have liked the MSG match a little bit better, honestly. So I might go Hell in a Cell, MSG, and SummerSlam. But they were all excellent. They were all excellent matches. Not Flair Steamboat, mind you. But they were all excellent. Somebody said, did I see Andrade's tweets? No, I didn't. So if it went up in the last half hour, 45 minutes since I've started streaming, I did not see it. So clue me in the chat on what Andrade may have said. Tuxedo T Servo, bit of a rough week. Thanks for doing these streams and along with AEW being a great distraction from the less pleasant things in life. It is appreciated. Well, Tuxedo, I appreciate you and I hope whatever's going on in your life is not too serious and things get better. Hopefully next week is not as rough as this week was for you. I enjoy your company. Nick Grosso, good show, and if they are going for a Black Pack feud, I am all for that. Dark Side of the Ring was crazy, and Rob Black came off terrible in that episode, because, well, I mean, just read up on Rob Black, I mean, speaks for itself. Yeah, Black and Pack would be fine with me, too. Black and Pack would be fantastic. Alright, so people are saying that he said F-U-W-W-E. So now the question is, did he say F-U-W-W-E as far as him being happy that he went out there tonight and had a kick-ass match that they never really, outside of NXT, allowed him to have? Like, is the tweet in regards to him, or is the tweet in regards to Charlotte? That would be my question. Is he angry about something that happened involving his fiance, or is this like, yeah, I had a great match tonight, fuck you, WWE, look at what you missed out on? I don't have the context on the tweet. So, I don't know that we really know what he's referring to. Will Robb says Bianca uses the torture rack. Does she? I've seen her have people on her shoulders and kind of do squats with them. But not like rack them like Luger. Maybe she has. But when I see her with somebody on her shoulders, usually it's like, she's showing off her strength. She's squatting, you know, up and down with them. WrestleVote said, this is only the beginning of the story that unfolded tonight. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. That's not good. There's more to the story. WrestleVote's quote tweeted Andrade and said, there is more to the story. I love me some wrestling drama on a Friday night. You know why I love that? Because it's happening on a Friday and not on a Sunday after my podcast drops. Although we still don't have, we may not have the context until after the podcast drops. But usually when the juicy stuff happens, it's like right after I put the show out. So I love me some wrestling drama. I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. It's very interesting. And if WrestleVote says that there's more to the story, I trust WrestleVote's. Yeah, shout out to Scott Woodford. Not only has Scott been a SoundUp channel member for 8 months and a Legends tier member at that, and Scott, thank you very much. He is on the Jericho cruise as we speak. The delayed Jericho cruise that was supposed to happen earlier this year that I probably would have been on. I enjoyed my time on the first one last year. I think me and my buddies were going to make that our annual voyage, and then COVID kind of fucked all of that up. So that went out the window. But I met Scott on the first Jericho cruise. And Scott is joining us live from the ship, from the high seas. So everyone say hello to Mr. Woodford in the chat. Tuxedo says Charlotte to AEW confirmed. Well, they better hope she's got a rock solid contract if that's the case. Because otherwise, if she has no contract, then hey, she could do anything she wants. But I have a feeling she's not going anywhere. I did watch the main event segment on SmackDown, and I thought it sucked. So maybe it has something to do with that. Who knows? I won't speculate. We'll wait until we find out more. Yeezus with the $5 super chat. Love the Lucha Bros, but I would rather have them give Hobbs and Cassidy more time and allow us to digest that dumb ending. Dumb ending to what, though? Dumb ending to the Cassidy match? I don't know which dumb ending you're referring to. Hello, Drew. Drew Johnson in the chat, another one of our channel members. Hulkling93 laughing at Jericho's insider commentary mentioning Britt's camera sense and Pac and Andrade having in-ring chemistry. While it is true, it is out of place in the sense of calling matches like a real bout. Yeah, Jericho loves to go in on the insider terms and things of that nature. Ryan Spies, I would have liked to see Mizunami, Riho, and Emi Sakura in the TBS tournament over a few of the people we got, but that is just my thoughts. Yeah, well, Mizunami is not, I don't think, signed to AEW. I think they need to feature their own people. Riho would have been great, I agree. But I like the fact that they're at least focusing on people from their own roster. Assuming Mizunami doesn't have an AEW actual contract. Jacob Donnelly with the $10 super chat. After the closing angle tonight. Oh, there's the lovely Carly Perez. The lovely Katrina. And my reaction when I played the video that time on the podcast. After the closing angle tonight, it looks like Cody will not be going heel and may beat Malakai tomorrow, which is a bummer. However, if the plan is to feud him with Pac after that, that is certainly a rebound. Yeah, you know, if Malakai loses, he won the first two. If he loses this one, it's not like it's going to kill him or anything. And if they transition away to Malakai and Pac, I think that'd be a fucking awesome match. In fact, that might have been why Pac won the match tonight. You know, keep him strong heading into a feud with Malakai. Quintus Brown, dope show tonight. That DDT spot on the apron was sick. Mr. J, 33352. Buy or sell doing a podcast 1984 to 1992 or 1993 to 2001. I think 1993 to 2001 would be more interesting. If you were a podcaster and you were looking for, you know, more kind of behind the scenes drama and stuff like that, I would think 93 to 01 would probably be the more interesting podcast to do. Dry Chicken, good Rampage show tonight. I wish AEW allowed Powerhouse Hobbs beat down Orange Cassidy after the match. To draw more heat on him. Nothing against OC. And he also says Anna Jay and Jungle Boy against Britt Baker and Adam Cole confirmed. I don't know. When they paired off Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch on TV, it didn't work out too well for either of them. Epsilon Samba, what's going on, Epsilon? What is your budget for a PC? I can give some recommendations. I am looking for certain specs. Power is very important to me. I want to make sure with, you know, when you're streaming or you're doing even limited video editing like I do. But really, the streaming is like the most important thing. I want a machine that has, you know, a fast processor that has power, that has RAM. You know, 32 gigs is probably fine. Solid state drive, at least 1 terabyte. The machine I have now is 15 inches. That's fine. I'm kind of looking for 17. And again, I have reasons why I'm looking at laptops and not desktops. I go through this every time. I will at some point have a big powerhouse desktop workstation. Right now, I'm looking for a laptop. Power is important to me. As far as budget goes, I wouldn't worry about budget. When it comes to this, specs and power and stuff, I'm not looking to spend, $5,000 or $6,000, but I wouldn't worry so much about budget. It's certain specs I'm looking for. And I've looked, they just came out with these new MacBooks, these new MacBook Pros that are coming out. 17-inch MacBook Pro, that's in the running too. I have that on my list. I mean, it looks pretty impressive. But that's Apple. I've always been a Windows guy. So I, as far as like a learning curve, as far as certain programs, I want to make sure they work. I'm a little hesitant about switching away from Windows. I was looking, there's a Lenovo one. Oh my goodness, I forgot. It was like a gaming laptop. I bookmarked like 3 or 4 different machines I was looking at. Dell. I was looking at a Dell XPS 17. I've had Dell computers for the last 20 years. So, I know I'm kind of all over the place here, but that gives you a sense of what I'm looking for. I am definitely open to any recommendations, though. So you can hit me up on Twitter, you can email me. I might put a tweet up in the next few days, actually, ask for your feedback. I'm looking to make a purchase very, very soon. But I would think video card, graphics card, all that stuff, for a laptop, whatever top of the line would be, that's what I'm interested in. I want to make sure I have a machine that will not give me any issues. Streaming, video stuff, everything will be perfect, pitch perfect. I won't have to worry about that. That's the most important thing. Windows 11, that's right, Windows 11 is coming out. Yeah, it's probably not going to be a MacBook. Quintus Brown, safe to say that the TBS title tournament will be better than the Queen's Crown. I don't know if the TBS title tournament is going to be great, but it's going to be better than the Queen's Crown. I will bet you almost anything that it will be better than the Queen's Crown. Joseph Brooks, who do you think could have had more success than they had if they weren't always injured all the time? Mark Henry or Ahmed Johnson? Mark Henry. He's a better promo, too. Hall of Pain, Mark Henry. Much better than Ahmed Johnson. Joseph Brooks again, as much as I so wish we would have gotten this match, I always wondered what makes The Rock against Shawn Michaels a dream match and what would the story have been? I mean, the story could have been anything. The story could have been anything. You could have played off some of the rumors about, jealousy. Shawn Michaels jealous of The Rock. He's the new kind of in young, up-and-coming blue chipper. Or you could have manufactured some other story. What makes it a dream match is that The Rock had charisma for days. And The Rock was one of the best promos in all of wrestling, right? He could talk people into their seats. He's very entertaining. Well, Shawn Michaels could also be very entertaining on the mic. Shawn Michaels was a better worker in the ring than The Rock was. But you take those two guys, the best qualities that they had, Shawn in the ring, Rock on the mic, you take those two things, you put them together in a program on TV, you let them go at each other. That would have been, I would consider that to be a dream program. Wouldn't even say dream match, dream program. Because you gotta include the promos building up to the match as well. But that's why a lot of people, I think, look at it that way. Two of the biggest names in the history of the business who never crossed paths in the ring one-on-one. It's just that what-if thing. It's like Austin and Hogan. What kind of match would Austin and Hogan, even in their primes, what kind of match would Stone Cold and Hulk Hogan have had? Maybe it wouldn't have been that great. But fuck, if that wouldn't have been the fucking biggest match that you could have possibly have done, you would have been an idiot not to do it when they were both in their primes. Goldberg and Austin. You have two big names like that, and they kind of pass each other like two ships passing in the night, there's always that what if, like, oh, what if? That would have been pretty interesting if Undertaker and Sting in the late 90s had gotten in the ring together. What would have happened? Dan Richards, Excalibur corrects, ring post is the hardest part. Well, I say it's the ring apron. Because that's what I've been told for years. Beowulf says, you could never understand a damn thing that Ahmed Johnson was saying. Well, that was kind of what I was getting at with the promos. They were definitely not his strong suit. Yeah, Turtlehead, you know, that's another thing. I've also been told, some of the machines I've come across are not Intel. Some of them are AMD. I've always had Intel. Is one better than the other? Is it not that big of a deal? That's another question, you know? Because a lot of these, like, gaming computers that are equipped for gaming and stuff, not that I would need it for gaming, but I know gaming machines can be very powerful. Some of them are AMD or Ryzen or Risen, however you pronounce it. What's the difference with Intel and AMD in terms of performance? You know, this is virgin territory for me. EJ Slemp, do you have an opinion on Kerwin Silfies, the WWE director who used to appear on WWE DVD documentaries? Is he as hated behind the scenes as Kevin Dunn? I've never heard a negative word about Kerwin. When his name is mentioned and people bring his name up, it's usually just in passing. I don't know too much about the guy personally. I've never heard anything negative about him, like I have Kevin Dunn. Dry chicken without flavor. I want to wish Naito and Ibushi 100% recovery from their injuries. Also, the mid-card heels in the locker room got to step their game up for more heat. EJ, buy, sell, or rent Ridley Scott's three best movies, Alien, Blade Runner, and Gladiator. Well, I saw two of the three, so I'll say Alien, Blade Runner, and Gladiator, because I didn't see, believe it or not, I never saw Gladiator. Never did. Big Show is almost in Gladiator. He told that story, I might have been on Chris Van Vliet's show, actually. And shout out to Chris. This is right after he came to WWE in 99. Like, he just came into the company. He was there maybe a month or two. And this opportunity presented itself to be in this movie. He didn't know it would go on to become, you know, this humongous major film. But he went to Vince McMahon and said, look, I need 6 weeks off to fly over to Europe and film this part. And Vince said, I didn't hire you to go do movies. And Big Show said, oh, you're right. You're right. And then he comes to find out later on it was fucking Gladiator that he could have been in. Drew Johnson. I was not impressed with Halloween Kills either. Your review was spot on. I really wanted to love it. I really did. But didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. I just didn't have a lot of enthusiasm for it when it was over. I like the first one from 2018. I like that a lot better. Abhinav. Buy, sell, or rent. Better in AEW. Jay White, Kota Ibushi, or Will Ospreay? I think Will Ospreay in AEW would be great. Jay White also, I think, would be good. I mean, look, obviously, Kota Ibushi in AEW, having matches with Omega and Danielson and people like that would be fantastic. I'm looking at it in terms of stories and character and promos and matches. I think White and Ospreay would be a much better fit than Ibushi would be. But I would love to see all three at some point wrestle some matches in AEW. Turtlehead, after the stream, go out of your way to find Orange Cassidy out of character. It is awesome. I've seen it. You're watching Orange Cassidy out of character right now, buddy boy. But no, I know the video you're talking about. He was being interviewed, I think, by a journalist or something on the street. Is when he was like, he looked like some drunken college frat boy or something. He had no shirt on. If that's the video that you're referring to, I've already seen it. Dave Meltzer, Wrestling Observer Newsletter, dropping $5. I am officially anointing Anthony Rafiq Khan as our wrestling savior. Any criticism towards him or his creations will now be considered blasphemous. JM, I am enjoying AEW content, but when Jericho is on commentary for Rampage, I get the urge to just skip the episode and watch your review instead. Dan Richards, Ivy Nile does the torture rack. She'll kick your butt. That's right, she did do that on... But again, it's like a modified version of it. When she used it last week on NXT, you know, I'm thinking of it in it, like the classic Luger one when I used to see him do it. But yeah, she uses a modified... There's that word again, modified. A modified version of the torture rack. If you watch my review from Crown Jewel yesterday, you'll get that reference. HBKC83, with the tons of super kicks in today's wrestling, it had me thinking, when was the last time Shawn Michaels won a match with his super kick? I'm sure there must have been a TV match after this, but the last WrestleMania match was Ric Flair. That was 2008. He never won another WrestleMania match after that. He lost his next two against The Undertaker, but I'm sure there was, you know, it's probably some obscure TV match that I'm unaware of. Andrew Johnson, Solid Monster, you're the man. But Michaels is the GOAT, not Bret Hart. Well, you are certainly entitled to that opinion. You are entitled to be wrong. Not everybody is right. In this case, you happen to be wrong. But that's okay. He's up there. He's definitely up there. But the GOAT, he is not. But thank you, Drew. It's like Drew's going to get the last word in here. Professional workstations don't come with AMD. Boy, there's a lot of laptop talk here in the chat. I run AMD. Is it Ryzen or Ryzen? How do you pronounce that? He runs it on his gaming rig, but if I was buying a laptop, I still go Intel. Yeah, that seems to be the prevailing thought. That's what I've heard. I keep calling it Ryzen. Is it Ryzen or Risen? Somebody's got to clarify this for me. Et2KC in the chat. Michaels is the GOAT, he says. Raisin. Raisin? Like raisin in the sun? Like the fucking raisins I had with my cereal this morning? Is that how it's pronounced? Raisin? That's pretty funny, actually. Nick Grosso just dropped $4.99. Why do you think the mystery person in the graveyard, or who do you think is the mystery person? Oh, I have no idea. I've seen those vignettes. I have no idea. I assume it's just somebody in developmental who's either debuting or just getting a complete gimmick makeover. I get the sense it's somebody we've seen already who's coming back with a totally different gimmick, but as far as who it is, I don't know. All right, Epsilon says it's called Ryzen. Ryzen, okay. Risen. Marcus says Risen. All right, so we got a million different answers. I'm just going to call it Ryzen. How about that? Everyone has their own pronunciation for it. I just created one myself. I'm going to call it Ryzen. If Moxley turns heel, I would think he would be the perfect first major feud for CM Punk since Punk created the Shield. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they want to draw on that history, but that would be an interesting connection. So now I'm being told that is the correct pronunciation. Ryzen. See, I was right from the beginning. So why did you... Why do we go through this whole rigmarole if I was already right in the first place? Now you got me all confused. That's right. You say tomato, I say tomato. You know what else I say? Well, Jeffrey Hall here for $5 here says Lex Luger is the GOAT. Luger is such a weird one because Luger gets a lot of shit for like not being a good wrestler and everything, and you know, maybe he was coasting in the late 90s, like 2000, like in the dying days of WCW when he was with Liz and doing stuff with Buff Bagwell. Like, Luger wasn't doing anything. But when I go back and I watch the occasional Lex Luger match, if I'm watching like NWA in like 89, 90, you know, Luger, I don't see what's so bad about Luger. I mean, Luger was not, you know, like a master technician or anything, but Lex Luger was a perfectly fine pro wrestler. And he was over, too. And then you look at Luger in 97 when he beat Hogan on Nitro for the world title. I think it was in Detroit. And my fucking God, it was on the 100th episode of Nitro. And he racked him. Speaking of the torture rack, he racked him. And Hogan submitted and the place went batshit crazy. It's one of the best moments in Nitro history. Luger had his, he had his peaks. He had his moments where he was super over. But I never understand when I hear people say, oh, Luger can never wrestle a match. Like, I don't know what Lex Luger you were watching, but when I saw him in, you know, again, NWA, early WCW days, I thought he was perfectly fine. He looked like $1 million, and he can go in there and have, if he was with the right opponent, I'm not saying he would be able to go in there with Elegante and have a fucking great match, but if he was in there with the right opponent, I mean, he could have a very good match. I mean, Luger was a body guy, but he could work. He definitely knew how to work. Joey says, Lex, let Liz die. That is not forgivable. Well, he did call 911. See, I'm more upset about the fact that there were other incidents where cops were called and Liz had bruises on her body. So even more so than what happened to her the day she died, I would say that the bigger issue is the fact that she appeared to be abused by Luger. That is something that should not be forgotten. What we're talking about is wrestling ability. That's what I was talking about here. The Gilf Lover. Do you watch BTE series on YouTube? And do you see Reynolds and Silver of the Dark Order as tag team champions? I don't catch BTE as much as I used to. I think Reynolds and Silver as tag team champions, I don't see it. They have so many great tag teams in that company, and they're very good, but I don't see it. EJ, I'm curious, who the most famous person you have ever met that is not involved in wrestling? Oh boy, wow, that's a good question, actually. In the nature of working in the city, I have met or bumped into certain people who are famous. I mean, I bumped into Al Pacino on the street, but it was like very brief. Does that count? I mean, I didn't interview the guy, but he was trying not to be noticed, but it's kind of unmistakable. So I bumped into Pacino around the block from where I work. I participated in a client event that was being hosted by Quincy Jones. And I got to meet Quincy. Actually, I got to meet a whole bunch of people that night. I got to meet Quincy Jones. I got to meet Brad Garrett, who's fucking, he's like Andre the Giant, this guy. He was the brother from Everybody Loves Raymond. I met Montel Williams that night. Fran Drescher. My God, that fucking laugh. Oh, God. It shivers up my spine. I could hear her from across the room. Oh, God. Oh. But anyway, I've met a bunch of people. I've been very fortunate. Like, some of the people I've bumped into have been pretty cool. But I don't remember all of them. You'd have to give me time to think about that. The Gilf Lover. Let's move on here. Brett and Sean really didn't have too many matches together on pay-per-view, so buy or sell. What was I reading here? Buy or sell from Survivor Series 1992 or WrestleMania Iron Man match in 96? I mean, obviously the Iron Man match is going to be remembered as an all-time classic, even though I think it's a little and I've said this before, I think it's overrated. I think people overrate that match. I enjoyed their Survivor Series match in 92, honestly, as a matter of personal preference. If I were to go back and want to rewatch one of the matches, I would rewatch the Survivor Series match from 92. But that's me. I was kind of bored by a good chunk of the early part of the Iron Man match. But a lot of people are going to disagree with me on that, which is fine. I mean, that Iron Man match is no Rock Triple H from Judgment Day 2000. That's still my favorite Iron Man match. EJ Slemp says, I met President Obama. That's very cool. That's very cool. Meeting a president is very cool. Actually, well, come to think of it, I met one too. But we'll leave that story out. Dr. NXT Scorpio. Watching SmackDown tonight is like the cliffhanger game from The Price is Right. Started good, and then suddenly fell off the cliff at its peak. If I got the name wrong for the minigame, I am sorry. Cliffhangers. Cliffhangers. With the yodeling song. Yodeling. Yeah, I think that's the game you're talking about. Cliffhangers is one of my favorite games from The Price is Right. Price is Right has a... Plinko is the number one, right? Plinko is my favorite game from The Price is Right. But, you know, Plinko, and I don't know what games they have on the modern day version. I don't watch the current Price is Right. I'm talking like old school Bob Barker. Plinko, the money game, the any number game, Penny Ante, which they got rid of after a while. The card game, where you would bid on a car using a deck of cards. The hole-in-one game was okay. I wouldn't say that was one of my favorites. Trying to think what else. What were some of my other favorite Price is Right game? Oh, you know what? They had the game where you would have to hit the target. That was a favorite. Plinko is absolutely a number one, though. Plinko's awesome. The Shell Game. Yes, Larry, thank you. The Shell Game. I love the Shell Game. The Shell Game was great. Rattle off some more old school Price is Right games. I'll let you know which ones are my favorite. Epsilon says, I got a letter from Clinton back in the 90s. So did I. My family actually sent an invitation. I don't know why they even bothered. They sent an invitation, I think, to... I guess Clinton would have been in office at the time. This would have been 95? 94? Something like that. And we got a form letter back. So it looked like he signed it, but obviously he didn't. It was a fucking stamp or something. So I still have it somewhere. Showcase Showdown. No, I'm not thinking of the Showcase Showdown. I'm talking about the individual Price is Right games that they have. The Dice Game. Thank you. That's another one. The Dice Game was great. They had a game. It's so funny to like go back on Pluto. They have a whole channel devoted to Price is Right, and they're really just, they go through these cycles. So right now they're showing episodes from like 82 to 84, and it was just such a different time. And you know, it's Bob Barker, and you know, who knows what he was doing on the side. This was a few years after his wife had passed away, but like on the show he would have some fun with the models, right? Barker's beauties. But some of the comments he would make, like, it doesn't bother me, but oh my God, if he made those comments today, forget about it. This guy would be canceled in 2 seconds. 2 seconds, he'd be gone. He'd be out the door, you'd never hear his name mentioned ever again. It's just a different time. And some of the stuff isn't even really offensive, but I look at this and I go, there's no way that this would ever fly today. EJ, last super chat, who was the first wrestler you ever met? Mine was Rhino, very random, but I met him at an indie show and I still have his autograph. First wrestler I ever met in person, I'm guessing it would have been that FanFest in 94. And so that would have been Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels, I met Tatanka, Vince McMahon. That's where I met Vince. That photo I put up on Facebook and Twitter in the past of me with Vince. Him in his three-piece suit. The punch board. That's another favorite. That's right, another Price is Right favorite. The punch board. You can win a punch by bidding correctly on these prizes. The five price tags was another one when you were bidding on a car. They had the Golden Road. You get to travel the Golden Road. EJ met Kevin Owens. Yeah, I hear a lot of good stories. People who have met Kevin Owens about how nice he is. But I mean, I've met a bunch of wrestlers. My God, I mean, I remember when Sid. Remember Funtime USA? That was the place they used in that 24/7 title skit they did with Crash Holly once when he was being chased by the Headbangers through down the super slide into the ball pit. They would have wrestlers come there occasionally. And I met Shawn Michaels again there when he was the Intercontinental Champion in 95. He had like the blue leather IC belt. But then the next time they had Sid when he was the WWF Champion. So this would have been late 96. And he brought the belt with him too. I don't have any photos from that, but I got to meet Sid, and he was, you know, he seemed rather disinterested, but he was, you know, cool enough. I remember when they used to bring Raw to the Nassau Coliseum, right across, like you would walk right over, right next to the Nassau Coliseum is a hotel. And a lot of the wrestlers would stay there. So when the event would be over, a lot of us would race over there so we can see them as they're coming through the lobby. And I remember one of the Raws, you know, my friend and I, we went into the hotel lobby and we're waiting. Some of the wrestlers had already gone up. Now they're coming down to go to the bar. And I couldn't get into the bar. But here comes Road Warrior Animal and here comes Road Warrior Puke Draws. It's called Puke, right? And they come down and before they could go into the bar, they kind of got mobbed by this group of kids. But they were cool, and they stopped, and they signed autographs, and, you know, Draws was very cool. He took pictures and stuff. So I've been fortunate, you know, even when I was younger, a lot of the wrestlers that I met were not dicks. You know, most of them were pretty cool. Epsilon says Kevin Nash was pretty cool to meet in person. I bet you he had his hand in his pocket, too. Every picture I see of Nash posing with people, he's always got that hand in his pocket. Have I ever met any athletes? I just named a whole bunch of them. Aren't wrestlers athletes? That's very offensive. Wrestlers are absolutely athletes. Ball players, yeah, I've met baseball players. I met a bunch of the New York Jets. You know, when I was in college, they used to train on campus. So when I was first moving out, they would be moving into our dorms. So some of the Jets would stay in my room. When I would move out for the summer, they would move in. And then when they would leave, we would move back, you know, into the rooms. So I went to like a bunch of Jets practices on campus and I ended up meeting and I got a bunch of autographs. I couldn't tell you a single fucking person who they were at this point. But I met a bunch of them at the time. I think they sucked back then, just like they suck now. Have I met Derek Jeter? No, I have not. I have not met Derek Jeter. But I'll bet if I had a vagina, he would have left me a gift basket. Larry met Jim Duggan, Steve Williams, and Bull Payne. One of these is not like the other. Shout out to Jim Duggan. He had emergency surgery the other day. His wife didn't say what for, but apparently the surgery went well. I believe he might still be in the hospital, so all the best to Hacksaw. Hopefully everything is okay. He's had some health issues in recent years. We've lost too many wrestlers. We can't lose Hacksaw. What is your favorite wrestler on a TV show? He says, mine is Roddy Piper as the Manic. Is that Manic or Maniac? And It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. What about Vader on Boy Meets World? Come on, that's a memorable cameo. My favorite would be King Kong Bundy on Married with Children. I still have that image of him putting his head through the front door. They actually brought him back many seasons later. Bundy made another cameo at a wrestling event, Wrestlepalooza. And he wrestled Bud Bundy, who was dressed up in a bumblebee costume. I still remember. I always loved Bundy. Bundy was great. DJ T Cartoon says, notice how I have not met Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy was not on the Jericho cruise last year. I was all ready to have our face-to-face, and he didn't show up on the boat. He chickened out. He was a coward. Cowardly Cassidy. That's why I call him Cowardly Cassidy. We have never been in the same place at the same time. All right. It is time to be the booker. Let's book some matches, shall we? Let's book ourselves a WrestleMania main event and see how it goes here on a Friday night. One half of the WrestleMania main event is the Icon, Sting. Never did get his WrestleMania main event, but God damn it, he's getting it here on my stream. Who will Sting be wrestling in the WrestleMania main event? This could be really, really good, or this could be really, really bad. Let's find out. Sting one-on-one against Rob Van Dam. Didn't we see that in Impact? I could have sworn we got that in TNA. Not bad. I'd call that a winner this week. Sting against Rob Van Dam in the WrestleMania main event. I could live with that. I could live with that match. Now, we have a little something to add here, because somebody sent me a link to another tweet. I apologize, I don't have the person's handle in front of me. But what's good for one is good for the other. We have one for the ladies as well. Let's book ourselves a female WrestleMania main event. How about this? This is something a little bit different here. This is our first female Be the Booker. And let's see how we do. It's the first time I'm trying this. I don't know all the names that are in this GIF, but let's give it a shot. Let's see who we come up with here. The first lady is, we've already failed. I don't even have to bother picking out a second person. I see that we pick Nia Jax, and that can mean only one thing. This is a fail. But out of morbid curiosity, let us see who her opponent would be. I can't believe that. Shit the bed right away. Oh my goodness. It will be Nia Jax one-on-one at WrestleMania against... Well, you know what? I'll tell you something. If you're going to put Nia Jax in the WrestleMania main event, I can think of far worse people to put her in the ring with than Medusa. Or Alundra Blaze, I guess. It says Blaze on her chest, so we'll call her Alundra Blaze. Alundra Blaze against Nia Jax. If anybody can carry Nia Jax to a good WrestleMania main event, I think it could be Alundra Blaze. I think Alundra could get the job done. But any WrestleMania main event with Nia Jax, I'm sorry, is going to be a fail. So there you go. Could have been Medusa against anybody else. I pick fucking Nia Jax. Jesus Christ. My God. Oh, anyway. We'll see how this Andrade Twitter drama unfolds. I'm very curious after what WrestleVote said. Exactly what is going on here. And I certainly hope that we get more details on this before I record on Sunday. So if I do, we will talk about that on episode 727 coming up on Sunday. Again, just a reminder, I'm not going to be streaming live, most likely. Could be a late change, but don't expect there to be a live stream tomorrow night. I will save my Dynamite thoughts for Sunday, along with all the other news of the week, and possibly, now that I realize the Impact pay-per-view is tomorrow and not Sunday night, maybe we'll talk a little bit about that as well, but... Drew says, Be the Booker female installment needs to be retired now. After I have selected Nia Jax. We won't retire it. I don't know that we'll do it every week, but I will not retire it. Hey, Tuxedo, have yourself a good weekend, and everybody else, too. Thank you for joining me on a Friday night. It was a little lighter than usual tonight, but you got the baseball game. You had a taped episode of Rampage. We didn't talk about SmackDown. It is to be expected. But I will see you guys on Sunday for episode 727. I will have a Dark Side of the Ring review up in the next few days on XPW. Don't forget my Halloween Kills movie review. If you like my movie reviews, that one went up a few days ago, so a lot of content. Thank you to all of our new channel members. I got content coming your way as well that's on my list that I have to get to. Oh my goodness, the work never ends. And Jonathan in the chat drops a $1 super chat, and it looks like he will be the final one. Jonathan, I salute you, my friend. All right, be well, and have yourselves a fantastic weekend. Busy Saturday coming up, but I'll see you on Sunday. Take care, guys.